It's time for Wisdom on Replay with Nostra Thomas and Coach Jim. Wisdom on Replay is brought to you by Levy Steel, the Candywood Wine Cellar, and Cafe 422. Here's your host, Nostra Thomas and Coach Jim.
Welcome back to Wisdom on Replay. It's been a while. Nostra Thomas and Coach Jimmy Devine.
There he goes. The third different title.
Gotta do it.
I know. It's part of what we do. So what's happening, Thomas? Everything good?
Yep, everything's good. Although, you know my struggles with my appliances at home. So we won't even get into that because this is a breakaway from that.
Yes,
right now.
This is a stress reliever for you, Tom. We do not need you to flip chairs.
Because I'm just using the most hot water I can in here, and I got heat in here. So
there you go.
I might hang out here all week.
You might sleep in the back office this week. Hey, one of the things we wanted to do, folks, is we bring in... In the advent of what we do as far as baseball and softball and everything like that, we have a really, really good friend of ours on today. I've known him a really long time. Tommy's known him a long time. I'm going to let Tommy introduce him and kind of state the nature of our relationship. And then we're going to get into some good stuff about professional baseball and the climate of professional baseball and what's going on.
And what we might want to do down the road in the future, near and with the Eastwood Field and you, and discuss the upcoming year and things like that. But with no further ado, welcome in. Everyone knows Jordan Taylor, the head of the Scrappers.
It's changed over the years. But
big shot to head of.
Whatever you want.
Well, yeah.
General manager.
Big man.
Managing
big
partner,
man,
however you want to say it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime, Jordan. Tommy, you explain the nature of your friendship, and then I'll explain mine.
Well, what has become lately is just me asking Jordan for favors, I think is how that's what's happened. It's been happening lately, and I do appreciate them. But no, way back when did you start?
2001.
Oh, my gosh. That's the same year I came back, yeah. And since then, there's been some unbelievable roller coaster, good, great, concert funny. I was actually going to have Andy Milovich on too.
Just saw Andy a couple weeks ago.
Yep. For you people, Darno, Andy Milovich was the founding general manager of the Scrappers.
And we laughed about Bob Crosby and all the funny. And there were, boy, we couldn't stop going once we started.
Yeah, there's lots of good stories.
He still remembered. Remember when we were worried about the field and the field protection and all that? And I said, you know what, Andy? Bob's been standing in the same place. They're doing nothing so long. We should put some field protection under his feet.
Legendary stuff.
Oh, it was just because there's two entities trying to do something. And one entity wants it done one way, the other entity wants that. There's money to be split in all directions. So it was... Kind of terse at times.
A lot, and then you also have the major league team, who also is in a piece of that puzzle as well. So you got really three different people to try to get one event on.
And distinctly, we remembered, and I'm sure you remembered, David Lee Roth. What a great ending! Jump the fireworks. He's drunk, falls in the golf cart, says, that's the way all Diamond Dave shows should end, with fireworks. Everything's great. Old ladies are singing Jump. And then the monsoons hit.
Yep.
And it wasn't fun anymore,
no.
Was it?
That was the best part, was right before then.
And that was the thing. Anthony had just said, great show, Tom. I'm patting myself on the back. Everybody's patting themselves. You know, it was hard. Yeah. The setups were so difficult. So hard, and there was no going home. You had to pick up the field protection. You know, people threw up on it. There's food. I mean, it's not pretty.
No.
Seems like a big shot jobs, but they really weren't.
They're
were
not.
They?
They're not glamorous.
They were not glamorous at all. Rolling cans.
All hands on deck.
Yeah. So we got the. Remember when the forklift got stuck in the
field?
Yeah.
Oh, I do.
And I'm screaming, I swear I'll murder you. It was Michael DeTosta, Jim.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my goodness. My man, Michael D. He's a cartoon character in himself.
Threatened like 10 people's lives. We couldn't get the stage out because there was so much water.
Rain.
And the Indians, the contract.
Pretty close.
Yeah, it was the
that.
Day after that. Because it was the 4th of July. The next day, the game was. Mm-hmm. So all that budget went right down the tubes when the helicopters had to come and dry the field out. Yep.
Oh, legend. And people don't understand. Oh. It's not much difference in the big leagues. I mean, it's all when something goes haywire, fireworks, shows, scheduling, it's all hand. Baseball is an all hands on deck business.
Oh,
my introduction to Mr. Jordan goes back to about right when he started with the Scrappers, when he was a young executive. It was the first building we opened. It was in the old train station downtown. And he come down to see me about doing advertising and doing days at the stadium and everything. And we go back 24 years, and I've seen the evolution of his career from running the sales department to assistant to every job under the sun that affiliate had to offer to being one of probably the more respected.
Jordan was the best.
Yes, one of the more respected minor league operators is a good way to put it in baseball, and he's had a profound effect on what goes on out there in single A ball, short season A, and understanding the game. And one of the reasons I wanted to have him on was we get so many questions about, well, my son wants to go to college and play professional baseball. There's so many opportunities if you love the game. I mean, I didn't end up doing it as a player. I've done it as a scout and, you know, special advisement or whatever you want to call it. Jordan did it getting into the business end of it and the teams. And the cool thing is we all get to be around the players. You know, he's been around some legends. You know, a lot of these guys that have got to the big leagues with the Indians all started down there in Mahoning Valley. And now with the draft league, you're seeing guys, you know, you would see maybe a Paul Skeens in his college days and different things like that. And that was one of my – was ask him questions about, you know, what led him to do this, mm-hmm. what, you know, funny his educational background. Some of the guys that, you know, he associates with and some of the funny stories we've told over the years about – him and I were more like player development guys, like, you know. But, Jordan, what did you do – I mean, I know, but what did you do, if you don't mind telling us, educationally to put yourself in a position to do what you're doing?
Yeah, so when I was looking at – colleges, I figured out in doing research that there was a lot of schools that had sport management programs, and I was loved playing sports, being involved with sports, and always enjoyed business as well, and figured that was a good kind of mashup to do something that I would enjoy doing, you know, for a career. So I ended up choosing University of Mountain Union. They have one of the better sports business programs around. Yeah. So I got my degree there. So I have a sports business degree and just a general, you know, business administration degree. Did a couple internships. The biggest one I did was at IMG. Their headquarters were in Cleveland at the time. So I worked there. It's really where I got to learn a lot about the business. Really the best of the best in the industry worked in that building when I was there. So
and again it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon because I recruit for IMG and had gone down and instructed, and we always had that in common.
Mm-hmm. So I did that for summer. I also worked for the Cleveland Indians, now Guardians, and kind of like a customer service customer relations position while I was still in college, and then started looking for jobs. So I was looking all over the country, had interviews all over, ended up getting a call from Andy Milovich and also Eric Haig, who was part of the original group that owned the Scrappers.
Yeah.
And they asked, got my resume and asked if I'd be interested in seeing about working for them. So I actually went to South Bend, Indiana, which was one of the teams they had at the time, and thought that's where I was working. They called me about a week later and said, hey, we had an opening in corporate sales with the Scrappers. Are you interested? I grew up right outside of Cleveland, so I figured, well, this is a good opportunity, not too far from home.
Perfect, yeah.
Huge Cleveland baseball fan, so I'm like, all right, this actually is a good spot to be in. So I figured I'd go there, work for a year or two, and then move on to another team. So a lot of my friends, you know, that work in the industry still, they've probably worked for 8 or 10 teams by now. It's kind of one of those positions you work a few years here, then move on to the next opportunity. Willing, you know, just kind of go all over, almost like a TV.
Like radio.
Yeah, TV, same type of job. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, but for me, I was always lucky. You know, I got to work for Andy, who really is one of the best in the industry.
Very innovative.
So I got to learn from him, which was great, and then just continued, you know, to move up the ladder with the scrappers.
He's not in the industry anymore, is he?
So he is a little bit. So he was in Frisco. He was running the Frisco team in Texas. He still works there. He works for an agency that does a lot of work with sports teams.
Oh, okay.
So so that's what he's he's doing now. And then worked in different positions and then got to the point with the ownership group that we have now. They own multiple minor league baseball teams, some other, you know, sports entities, and got to kind of get some experience in all of those as well. And then also help work on some of the, you know, other events that we do and kind of creating that type of schedule as well. So always had lots of opportunities here. Now I get, you know, to work really closely with Major League Baseball in developing the draft league, which is going into its sixth season. So I get to be pretty
involved. Wow, that's amazing. That's gone that long.
Yep.
I remember, that seems like yesterday they just started that league.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah, so, but we didn't start it at our place for a couple years, not even 2 years. Right?
So we've been 6 years in this the 26th season will be the sixth year in this league.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it flew.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. I had that.
And for you that aren't familiar with what the draft league is, college baseball has summer leagues that are highly scouted. The Jayhawk League, there's a number of leagues top prospects go to. What Major League Baseball figured out was, let's put our own league together, invite these players, get them in, and then the technology that's been implemented at the stadium is amazing, where if a scout, an agent, a player development guy, anybody wants to get on and they have the the passcodes to do it, or they're able to do it, they can really break down a player. Because it, you know, as much as people say about kids and players making the money they're making in baseball, there's a lot of study that goes into drafting and signing a player. So they do their homework, and the technology that's available, when you walk into Eastwood Field, you're looking at probably one of the more technologically advanced stadiums that you're ever going to see. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, a lot of it's behind the scenes. Yep. So you don't realize that up in the press rooms, but if you look around, you'll see, you know, baseball cameras all over the ballpark that are utilized to collect data. And we even have, during the season, somebody who works full-time for us who basically analyzes data for our players to give to the managers, coaching staffs, and major league teams who are looking to pull anything specifically on players.
And they're able to better manage their investment dollars as to if they can. You know, back in when Jordan and I first met, and Tommy, when I first started, we were like light years ahead because we had RightView Pro, which was an analysis program that Don Slott, a former major leaguer, developed, and it was. I still have it, and he had since sold the company. But that was kind of the advent of film analysis. You saw it, but then it was breaking it down 60 frames a second, biomechanics, angles, being able to measure, being able to draw, being able to overlay players, and that started in the early 2000s, and it's come so far now. It's crazy. It took me a while to learn how to learn RightView Pro, and I couldn't imagine the stuff they're fooling with.
What's
now
the challenges though with this new thing? Because here's the way I look at it, and you know, being a longtime baseball player, I know that you had the scrappers. It's pretty much a single A team, and players go up. You've seen a lot of them go all the way to the top and actually become great players. This is a little different because the better that your team is, you start losing those guys towards the end of the season. So that's a challenge, isn't it?
It's a huge, huge challenge. So you're spot on with that. What happens is I was just in meetings with Major League Baseball last week in New York City, and they were just showing all the data from the players, numbers drafted players, where the guys are at, prospective players. But what happens is, we're used as a showcase, essentially.
Yeah.
So
that's good and bad.
It's good and bad. So, you know, a major league team may want to see a particular player. They all have agents as well. So, like, they will come in, and they may only be here for two or three outings. That's it. We already know that when they come in, or they might get a weekend of bats. They just want to see something and collect some data in this environment, and then they're gone. So just that first half of the season, we might see 50, 55 players come through. Very few of them start the season, end the season.
Yeah.
When you see...
Because I remember we were talking when I kept coming to the games, and like, hey, Jordan, we lost this guy, that guy. It's like a
So like winning is just complete luck, because if you can keep a team together, enough of them long enough at the right time, you're good. So like the best team at the start of the year is not going to be the best team.
The end of the year.
Because if they're the best team early, you're going to lose those guys.
So there's so much of
that's the good and bad with it.
And really, I was like, I didn't understand. Like, I had seen the Cape Cod League and the Jayhawk and the, you know, a lot of the collegiate leagues. And this was a different animal because it's a straight line to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. If you got some kid that's trying to prove himself that's not on the map, they usually stay a little bit. But once they get some run where, hey, we're going to take you.
Right. And that's the
they're gone. They're gone.
Because I might be sitting there watching a future star because he may not be there. But the Scrappers A team, you know, usually it's the trudging through A to double A, or somebody gets hurt and you take them down. Yeah. This is a real chance to maybe catch
lightning in a bottle. Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, there is.
On the guys you missed.
You even look, not specifically Scrappers, but our draft league. You know, a good example is Jonah Tung, who is with the Mets, who's the number one, probably the number one pitching prospect in baseball. Well, he pitched in our league, and Frederick was a younger kid, 18 years old when he came into our league, had some promise, did really well in five or six starts, got drafted fifth or sixth round, shot through the minor leagues, now is the one of the top prospects in baseball.
How about that?
Name some of the guys, because Jordan, you and I always go back and talk about when it was the Scrappers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how many? I mean, Sabathia.
Yeah. Well, the first Ramirez, team.
Yeah. The first team. Give us some on that.
Had Sabathia and Victor Martinez. So
when did Ryan Church come through?
He was, I think, year two.
Okay.
He was really early.
I knew he was going to be something.
He was really good. I mean, you look at, you know, over the years, Francisco Lindor, Jose Ramirez, Stephen Kwan.
Kwan was on the scrap?
Yeah, so we had.
Oh, my gosh, I didn't even realize it. Wow.
Right now, I think we're close to 130, 135 players from 99 who've at least played in the big leagues, gotten
into the game.
Yeah, so even you look right now in the World Series, you mentioned that Ernie Clement was one of our guys.
Yeah,
Just was on fire in the World Series.
Yeah.
So he played for us.
I remember him, yeah.
And you start to see the great thing that people don't take advantage of is going and looking, and even in the draft league or whichever, seeing where a player's at then, and even in that world, how they develop. Who was the young man, and I always forget, and he was probably my favorite player in the Scrappers time period, outside all the big leaguers. He ended up, he was a middle infield guy, and I always used to rant and rave about him to you. And then he got taken in the Rule 5 draft. And what the Rule 5 draft is you get to a certain amount of minor league time, and major leagues can come in, and they have a draft. And if they feel a guy's worthwhile, they'll take him from another organization. But they have to they buy him for $50,000, and he has to stay on the major league roster for a year. If he does not perform, they send him back, and the money's refunded. It's kind of a crazy thing, but it's been Santana from the Mets was a rule. There have been a ton of unbelievable Rule 5 guys. Who's the young man I'm talking about?
Tony Walters.
Tony Walters. And this is one of the wilder stories when I talk to kids about career, about position change. Tony Walters was a middle infield guy. The Indians took him in the third round. His problem was he was stuck in the Lindor era where you guys were loaded in the middle. And he was unbelievable. Like this kid, some of the stuff he did, I was like, wow. Somebody told him, go catch. So he converts to catching. He caught maybe, 8 months?
Mm-hmm.
He caught about 8 months, and the Rockies took him in the Rule 5. So here's a kid that had only been catching professionally. He was a middle infielder, and he created a whole trend because he was a shortstop. He was a really good shortstop. And scouts started looking at guys going, hey, if he's a tool or a step short is a middle guy, let's put him behind a plate. JT Realmuto was a first-round draft choice as a shortstop, all-star catcher. The Nola kid, same thing, Florida State, All-American shortstop. Santana was what? A third baseman. You said Victor. Victor was drafted as a shortstop. Now, he was never going to play shortstop. Oh, yeah, he was drafted shortstop.
Holy cow,
and what you're seeing is they're taking hyper-athletic people and putting them behind the plate now. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of crazy. And some of them end up, if they don't hit enough because they got cannons, They catch. Henley, the catcher, the closer for the Dodgers, and I think he was with the Angels last year.
Jansen?
Like him. They saw him in the World Baseball Classic catching, throwing like 17s, which is inhuman. But he couldn't hit his way out of a paper bag. Somebody gets a genius idea. Let's put him on the mound. And now what's he, year 12, year 13? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he'll probably make the Hall
They'll
of Fame.
They'll find a place for him.
Yeah, make the Hall of Fame as a closer. Rick Ankiel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Position switch, you know. And Jordan's seen some amazing things, some amazing players. Who's about?
Any
of
good
course,
stories.
This is the little kid. This is the little kid question. Who is the best guy you saw in your time as the Scrappers? Now, not the draft league, but the Scrappers.
So two are up there. The one was Lindor for us. And actually, there's three. The second one was Adley Rutschman, who played.
Oh my gosh! I remember the day he showed up.
That's right.
You guys sold out. He was the first pick, and everybody.
Yeah.
Anybody knew baseball was at Scrapper Field because the number one pick in the draft was at Eastwood Field.
I always thought, and believe me, I right away when I saw Ryan Church, I go, that guy reminded me of Phil Plant here. Reminded me of a really, didn't look like a power hitter, but boy, he could
put a charge in.
Yeah, so that those are two of the best. Hamilton was the other one who came through for. He came through two different times, but probably was the most talented player. But he just had other issues that.
Yeah, I remember. I remember you and I because I saw him.
What's he doing now? You know,
he's out in Arizona. I think preaching. Yeah. I think he's a preacher.
But he was a prodigy. So when I was at IMG, he was the first pick in that draft out of high school. Blew up. Had some personal issues, came back down again, but he
got in trouble down. He was in Tampa. He got hurt. He was in a car accident, and he started running around in Bradenton. And where IMG was, if you remember, if you go down, you know, the beach highway there, there was this tattoo shop, and it was Shady Grady at best. And he went and got tattooed, and he never left. And he ended up having an addiction problem, got run out of the game.
Yeah, I remember.
Then he went Tampa. Since he picked him up, he was ineligible. Yeah. And I saw him in extended in the fall when they'd have the best prospects. And he had just come back in. He was playing against Pittsburgh in Bradenton. And he was – he had him
and then over who to Skyler. But him throws a ball to a fan and the fan falls out of the stands and passes away.
They had,
it's just like he had something – always bad. Something going on.
We had a guy. There's a scouting director with the Yankees, Wayne Brighton. He'd been with the Red Sox, and he was around for Griffey and Hamilton. And I ran into him at a Kent game. I got assigned to go see this kid at Kent, and he was there because Pitt had a kid that was like a first three-round center fielder. And it started raining, and I was working for him, but I'd never met him because he was up the food chain a bit. He come, oh, hey, nice to meet you. You know, they told me about you. You might be here. Great. And we got into talking, and I said to him, this guy'd seen anybody in the late 80s up to now, he'd seen. Because he's the guy that decides how much, what round and how much you're spending. And I asked him, I go, who is the best prospect you ever saw? And I expected him right out of his mouth to go, Griffey. And he goes, here's define it. I go, okay, who is the best baseball athlete prospect? And he goes, you think I'm going to say Griffey? And I go, yeah. He goes, nope. He goes, Josh Hamilton. I go, let me take a guess why. He goes, why? I go, Hamilton threw 97 off the mound. Griffey didn't. He goes, yep. And he goes, as far as them on numbers, like Hamilton almost had a perfect score on his scouting report, which is unheard of. You know, like 80, he was almost an 80. An 80 guy is Babe Ruth running a 6.260 and throwing 100 off the mound. Basically Otani. I'd love to see an Americanized scouting report on Otani now and see what the numbers are, because that'd be pretty close to, you don't know where he'd go defensively though, outfield right. First, you know, yeah. But outside of that on tools and everything, he'd be crazy. But yeah, I know there've been some, who's the, you guys had another first rounder with Cleveland, he's center fielder, he's out of University of San Francisco.
Zimmer.
He was funny because when he came to Cleveland, when he came to you guys, he couldn't defend. He could hit. And he was there, to shore up himself as a defender. When he got to the big leagues, he became a wicked defender and didn't hit as much. And I thought that was the weirdest transition. Yeah,
we had a number of those first round out. We had Trevor Crow, then Zimmer, then we had Tyler Naquin, who's another one who's pitching now.
He converted over to pitching. Naquin did.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Crow, we had him. We had Crow personally up at Diamond Nine up in Austintown. He came up and signed for us. And what a great guy. God bless him, he took his money. And he was in for like 3 or 4 years. But he just never found the right niche. He could play. But he never caught it right. And he held on to his money. And he's a venture capitalist now out in Arizona. Doing all right for himself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you see guys like that. And then...
Now, how do you get your roster? Like, when is the roster picked? How does it get to you?
Yeah.
Who gets to go where?
Yeah, so we work with directly with Major League Baseball on that. Yeah. So what'll happen is the scouting directors from all the teams will supply watch lists to Major League Baseball on players they would like to see potentially in the league. We have a league president. His name's Sean Campbell, who was a scouting director for the Padres for a number of years. So he's our league president right now.
Yeah.
What he does then is works that list along with his relationships with different colleges and agents and puts together a grouping of what might be 250, 300 players.
Now, does it matter where they're at currently, or it's just a crap shooter?
They all have to be, in one way, eligible for the draft. To play in our league.
But in the regions to go wherever, it doesn't matter.
What they try to do in our league, they try their best to just equitably distribute the talent because it's really everybody's the same, like in our league, the teams. So, like, you do your best to put as many potential draft picks in each market that they can best guess.
That's good.
They'll regionalize them
if there's. Make the league competitive,
They'll regionalize them if there are. So, if there happens to be a really good local kid, we would then get that player. So, insane.
Which helps markets. With the fan base.
Yeah, exactly.
But as always, it's still a league of promotions and marketing and getting sponsorships.
Yeah.
It's a huge. It's probably the biggest part of the business.
It is. So between sponsorships, tickets, concessions, merchandise, all those things are just huge pieces of the puzzle. And the thing is, a lot of people are looking just for something to do. So, like, you have your core people who they want to see the prospects, and, you know, if we have a major league manager.
You got somebody just wants to hang out somewhere.
With friends.
Right.
Go have a couple drinks, hot dogs, whatever.
It's the best
we've never done
that.
We've never done that. Never
it's on the Eastwood Mall complex, but it's its own little world is what makes it so special, because you're looking out on the skyline trees. Like, you could be in LA. I mean, it's that good of a look.
Yeah, it's a good, we have a really good setup. I mean, honestly, like, the vision that was there, you know, almost 30 years ago to put a stadium in a retail complex, like, that's the model now. Like, at major league, minor league, that is what you're looking to do. So, like, to figure that out that long ago and really to be the first doing something like that and putting the entertainment in a...
And bringing everything to a community spot where that is the place to go for everything. And I think we're going to have him back because we're running out of time. Because we have to talk about a venue, a sports complex, to bring all those kids to that mall. I mean, look, right now they go out and play in Timbuktu.
Yep.
Now, you think these teams won't want to come to movie theater, go play on the big field stadium,
four hotels,
shopping, everything to do there.
Yeah, wings, all in one spot. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, and Lord knows we've had.
It's the place for it to happen.
We're not doing a great job of hiding, of keeping this a secret. It's a conversation that Jordan, Tom, and I've had, and we've had with some of the powers that be, and hopefully down the line, it's going to come to fruition.
It has everything else. It needs that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because that's the constant market. Youth sports is a constant market. It doesn't change.
Nope.
1 minute left. Well, Carl just gave me a finger, and it wasn't the middle one this time for us.
So we're moving
up
in the world.
Hey, Nostra Thomas didn't do too well last week. I hope you missed that part. But this week I'm coming back with the Colts +6.5, Vikings +4.5. I mean, the Colts I think are -8. Take the Colts and the Vikings. But go ahead, and I want to thank TJ Perline Asphalt. And go ahead.
Let me fire. First of all, I want to thank Jordan and the Scrappers.
Yes, Jordan. Thank you.
For including us in their lives and his busy schedule and coming into this. We've been all friends a long time. The Den, Jesse DiGiacomo, great help to our business, great help to as a friend. Franklin Healthcare and the Manios family, Levy Steel, the Gattas, the Sudis family, and the numerous patrons we have with Diamond
Partridge
Nine.
Partridge family.
Yeah. We're going to have a bus like that, too. Big peacock on the side. But Tommy's paying for the paint job. That's why it's taking a little while.
Adam's family.
But, yeah, if we missed anybody, we apologize. But there's so many people that have supported us.
And there's going to be so many more coming along. And thanks, Carl, for everything that you do. We appreciate you like crazy. Thank you.
And the other last thing, we're going to have a really, really great offer for a future sponsor, the Sherry Gordon Salon. Be sure to listen up
Downtown
over the next
Warren.
Yep, listen over the next
Cuts
couple
my
weeks
hair.
Because she's going to have an amazing offer for anybody listening to this show or any clients we have at D9 and U2 Sports. Again, thanks a lot.
We're
going to
have
everybody
Jordan
have
back
a great
on
week.
As the season gets closer and all that fun
and
stuff.
And we're going to talk about the World Series a little bit. That's what we'll get
and
the next
shop
time.
At the mall. Scrappers have merchandise there.
Yeah, hit the merch store for the Scrappers.
Christmas presents.
Instead of buying purple hats from some other team.
Thanks, everyone.
Yep. Have a good one.